It is among the strangest and among the greatest stories in the Bible. God places a God-sized hand on Ezekiel, and God transports Ezekiel to a valley strewn with human bones. In a trance-like state, Ezekiel surveys the wreckage, exposed to the blazing Middle Eastern sun. The bones are desiccated, dry, bone dry, dry as bone dry. With God's hand still heavy upon him, Ezekiel is made to wander among the bones, among the human debris, carefully picking his way over and between the bones. East and west, he crisscrosses the valley. Ezekiel takes in the full weight of this vast valley of human wreckage, this valley of failure and destruction and death. And finally, God breaks the silence. God asks, "Ezekiel, can these bones live?" You may or may not know this, but when God asks a question in the Bible, it's wise to pay attention. The first question God asks in the Bible is, "Where are you?" And God asks it of Adam and Eve just after they've sinned. In fear and confusion and shame, they are hiding from God. They are hiding, cowering behind a thicket of banana leaves, when God's booming voice shakes them to the core, "Where are you?" As if God doesn't know. And maybe you remember God's question to Sarah. Sarah overhears a messenger telling her husband that in her antiquity, in her great old age, she will conceive and bear a child. And Sarah, in her disbelief, listening outside of the tent, she snorts out a laugh. She can't help herself, gives herself away. God pivots, stares at her, and demands, "Why did you laugh?" So when God asks a question, pay attention and don't laugh, no matter how preposterous that question might seem to you. So when God asks Ezekiel, "Ezekiel, can these bones live?" Ezekiel, who has been paying attention, is wise enough to hedge. Although the bones are very dry, although the valley is as dead gets, Ezekiel knows better than to state the obvious. Deftly, Ezekiel deflects the question, and with supreme confidence, Ezekiel replies, "Well, God, if anyone knows the answer to that question, it's you." Brilliantly played, Ezekiel. But Ezekiel isn't off the hook yet. God commands Ezekiel to speak to the bones, to preach to the bones. God commands Ezekiel to speak to them and to awaken the bones, arouse and aliven them with words. And fortunately for Ezekiel, God provides the words. And so it is. So it is that Ezekiel prophesies to the bones. Standing there in the valley, surrounded by death and human wreckage, Ezekiel speaks to the bones. And the story says it comes to pass. It comes to pass that in that quiet as death valley, there is a stirring, a noise, a rattling. And the bones are coming together, bone to its bone, and then sinews, then flesh, then skin is covering them, and finally and impossibly, breath. Breath comes into them, and they are living, and they are standing on their feet, and they are again a vast multitude. The story of the Valley of Dry Bones is among the strangest and among the greatest stories in the Bible. Strange because it is surreal and dreamlike, fantastic and bizarre, a story of body parts and zombies and an apocalyptic landscape. But it's among the greatest stories because it's true, because it speaks a true word about what is possible when we partner with God. A year ago, on a day of sunshine and triumph, two bombs exploded right out here. Two bombs exploded. The Boston Marathon exploded. Lives were taken, bodies broken, trust shattered. And if you were at the finish line that day, April 15th of 2013, you would have seen what Ezekiel saw. Death and destruction, human debris strewn from Dartmouth to Fairfield streets, crisscrossing Boylston from Lord and Taylor to the Forum, from the public library to Marathon Sports. This street, these blocks, a vast plain of human wreckage, destruction, and death. And then we took our cue from God. One after another, from victim to first responder, from governor to mayor, from pulpit and desk, we gathered our courage and we gathered our goodness. And we refused to let others' hate make haters of us. And we refused to let the deafening sound of explosions silence us. And we refused to cower in fear. Together we faced the carnage, the outrage, the destruction. And one by one, we cleared our throats and we dared testify to the goodness, to the breath, to the life. And we did this, we humans, in a million, million ways, in a million, million voices, in Boston and Massachusetts and across this country and around the world. A million, million ways. But listen now to a single thread of voices. Voices drowning out the hatred and the destruction. Listen to the voices of knitters. Knitters, crocheters, felters, sewers, weavers, who are literally knitting this world back together, one scarf at a time. Who are sending scarves in blue and yellow, the colors of the Boston Marathon, scarves knitted with love and courage, scarves to wrap this year's runners in love and courage, for every runner is defying his or her own fear to run. The Marathon Scarf Project was born here at Old South Church, born in the hearts of Old Southers, Diane Gosher, and Marilyn Jackson Adams. They set out to do something quite small and simple, to knit scarves for the couple of hundred runners who come here to our Blessing of the Athlete service the Sunday before Marathon Monday. But their simple, humble idea has grown and spread and multiplied. From the wreckage of last year's marathon, there has arisen a vast multitude of knitters from east and west and north and south, from nearly every state in this nation and some 10 foreign countries, India, Uruguay, Thailand, Canada. Knitters have been knitting scarves, scarves knitted with love and courage, scarves to wrap this year's runners in love and courage. And so far, we have received here at Old South Church nearly 5,000 scarves. Listen. Listen now. As these prophets wrest life from death, listen to some of the stories.
We received a scarf knitted by kindergartners from Aiken Elementary School, West Hartford, Connecticut. The scarf was accompanied by a photo of 30 small knitters and came with this note. The kindergartners wrapped you in their love, Boston strong.
Our scarves are made and sent with love and blessings from the members of First Congregational Church, Woodstock, Connecticut. The card is signed by the Reverend Jocelyn Gardner Spencer, pastor.
A package of scarves arrived from Arizona. Each scarf is a message with these words. Knit it with love and support as you run the marathon. Best wishes and good luck.
A scarf from West Virginia had this note: "Goodness will always triumph evil. God bless you, runner. Kathy."
From New Hampshire: "Our daughter ran her first marathon last year and was sadly among those not able to finish. Thankfully, she was unharmed. She's running again this year, so your thoughts of love and courage are especially meaningful to our family."
We received a box of hand-knitted marathon scarves from First Congregational Church in La Crosse, Wisconsin. In the box were two finger scarves, one knitted by a 4-year-old and the other by a 6-year-old.
From Vanessa in Pennsylvania: "I apologize if this is not very good, but this was my first time knitting. Here's wishing easy miles to the scarf's new owner."
"Please accept these two scarves, knitted by me for the Boston Marathon runners. You asked that they be interwoven with love and courage. I did my best. These scarves were knit in the evenings as my 89-year-old father-in-law paced our home with sundowner syndrome, a symptom of Alzheimer's where the person becomes increasingly agitated, restless, and confused until falling asleep. Knitting for me was saving. Knitting for others was sacred. Thank you for creating this project that allowed me to show I care. Peace be with you, Anne. Peace be with you, Anne, Durham, North Carolina."
I am originally from Marblehead, Mass., and still have family ties to New England. We watched the marathon last year with horror. It was amazing to watch the people of Boston step up. When I saw your post about making scarves for the marathon runners, I started knitting. I wanted the runners to know that there are a lot of us around the country who will be watching and running with them. As you instructed, my scarves are interwoven with love and courage. With love and blessings from the Williams family, Sandy Springs, Oklahoma.
Enclosed are two scarves for Boston Marathon Scarf Project. I'm originally from Massachusetts, but now live in Florida. I said a prayer while making these, that the marathon goes well this year, and that God will watch over all workers, participants, and spectators to keep them safe. Sincerely, Rita, Tampa Bay, Florida.
I hope you will accept this scarf. It was knitted with love by a Muslim woman. May it keep one runner safe. Salam. Alila, Chicago, Illinois.
Dear Old South Knitters, enclosed are 39 scarves knitted and crocheted by the ladies at the Lakeport Square Continuing Care Retirement Community in Leesburg, Florida. The yarn was donated by the St. James Episcopal Church. Thank you for letting us bring hope, love, and prayers to this year's runners.
From Linda in Mamamet, Massachusetts: I'm dedicating these scarves to my son-in-law, Rick. Rick is a marathon official and a first responder who was at the marathon finish line last year. He jumped into action and started helping others even before the second bomb. He will be at the finish line again this year.
From Franklin County in Iowa: Thank you so much for giving us here in the Midwest the opportunity to participate in the healing. These scarves are filled with Midwestern love and prayers.
Oh, dear Old South Knitting Group, you are awesome. You can move mountains. You started a wave of knitted love that will wrap itself around our runners. God bless you.
Judith from Rosendale writes, I believe in the power of yarn to heal and warm the soul.
This note from across the pond. This scarf was knit with love and hope. Machine wash, cold water, gentle cycle, lay flat to dry.
So the U.S. Postal Service used to deliver mail to Old South Church in Boston by a single nice person that we've known for many years. She has been replaced by a truck that comes every afternoon. We have, the Marathon Scarf Project has moved the U.S. Postal Service. And you should know how many scarves come in with washing instructions. And I was at the desk when one lady handed over her scarf to me, and she kissed it and said, "Here you go, baby," and handed it over to me. So these are creations of love and care. And if you're up in the room as the scarves are being opened and processed, you hear the oohs and the ahs. There's no two scarves the same. And then we start weeping as the notes are read. And this past Thursday, 3 days ago, a large bus pulled to a stop right here in front of Old South Church in Boston. Across the bus were painted these words, "Burlington Fire Department, Burlington, Massachusetts." The bus was filled with firefighters in dress uniforms here in Boston to attend the funerals of their comrades. A firefighter stepped out of the bus, walked through our doors, and handed us a large box of Marathon scarves. The story of the Valley of Dry Bones is among the greatest stories in the Bible because it is true, because it speaks a true word about what is possible when we partner with God. Will the whole church say amen?